Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 5th, 2014. Delegates for rebel fighters at the peace talks in Addis declare May to be a month of peace. Meanwhile, more deadly fighting in Unity State over the weekend.
From the 7th of May to the 7th of June, that we want to make it a month of tranquility, that this will enable our people actually to get some relief food. People will go back to their villages to plant because this is a rainy season.
And there is no let-up in the fighting for control of Bentiu Town.
By afternoon yesterday at 4 p.m., SPLA forces entered Bentiu Town and are in control of the situation in Bentiu. This morning, SPLA came under attack around Bentiu.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The government of South Sudan and rebels allied to Riek Machar have signed an agreement declaring 1 month of truce. The spokesman for the rebels, SPLA in opposition, Hussein Marnyot, says the accord will pave the way forward, allowing humanitarian aid to reach hundreds of thousands of people trapped in areas of fighting and give them time to relocate to safe places and plant crops so they can feed themselves.
The humanitarian situation in South Sudan is very dire. So now we worked out an agreement, the two parties, in the presence of mediators and the partners of IGAD, to open up humanitarian corridors using River Nile, Sobat, road corridors, rail, air, and also from the neighboring countries. One important thing that we have also agreed is actually this month of May, say from the 7th of May to the 7th of June, that we want to make it a month of tranquility, that this will enable our people actually to get some relief food. People will go back to their villages to plant because this is a rainy season. And also that people can go and care for their livestock. And also people can move back to safe areas whereby they want to resettle to new areas that they want.
People out here are saying that both of you are known for not respecting what you sign in Addis Ababa. What makes it different this time that both of you will respect this agreement that you have signed?
It is true that the first agreement that we signed was the cessation of hostilities. And cessation of hostilities was not respected. And we actually, one important article was actually the withdrawal of foreign forces, like the Uganda forces and the other rebels of North Sudan that are actually present fighting along with the government of South Sudan. That agreement was not respected because these two articles were not actually implemented. Now, this agreement is actually about humanitarian matters. We are very concerned that our people are really suffering. The situation is horrible, that our people need some relief. Our people need some services. Our people need to relocate to some areas. Some people are living in displaced camps. We want to make this really, anybody who is concerned with his people, this is the commitment that actually we are making.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This agreement means that from today and tomorrow, you will still continue fighting each other until the 7th, and then you will stop fighting. Is that right?
That is not the case, because any agreement must have a date that actually when it is going to come to effect. But already there is fighting, because the time the whole international community, the people in the region here, the churches, everybody is appealing for peace, that we need to stop war. The government was busy preparing. And you heard yesterday that they attacked Nasir, they attacked Bentiu, and they entered the towns. And this is completely in violation with the appeals that people are making that we should stop the war.
And let's talk about the mechanism of implementing this humanitarian access. You say there will be a coordination from the government side through the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs and from your side through Humanitarian Wing. Where is your humanitarian organization based? Because it looks like you are scattered all over these places that you have been fighting over. Where is your center of activities to coordinate humanitarian activities to areas that are under your control?
We agree that the relief comes from these neighboring countries and from within the country. We are grateful to the government of Kenya and Ethiopia that we managed to open liaison offices here, so that if there are relief agencies that are moving from Ethiopia, we have an office here that can liaise with them. Again, also, we have in Nairobi, Kenya. So we are also hoping that actually Sudan also will allow us to have a relief office there so that, you know, through the River Nile, through the roads, they can supply us from Khartoum and all this. So with us, we have these relief offices. Of course, there would be a senior office based in South Sudan or any other place that will coordinate with the UN and the international agencies when it comes to the coordination, to the planning, to the issue of signing an MOU, you know, with them. And all this will be done at the level of the leadership. But with the implementation and the execution of the program will be done at the level of the liaison offices.
That's Hussein Marnyot, spokesman for the rebel group SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, earlier today. VOA tried but could not reach President's spokesperson, Ateny Wekateny, for comment. Fighting continues in two strategic South Sudanese towns after government forces launched an offensive over the weekend. Army officials say they now control northern towns of Bentiu and Nasir, but opposition officials dispute that claim. Philip Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Sudan People Liberation Army spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre says government forces launched the twin offensive on Saturday evening. He says yesterday the SPLA gained control of the Upper Nile state town of Nasir and the Unity state capital of Bentiu, the scene of an ethnic massacre 1 month ago.
After capturing Mayom on the 25th of April and faced counterattack from the rebels, and by afternoon yesterday at 4 p.m., SPLA forces entered Bentiu town and are in control of the situation in Bentiu. This morning, SPLA came under attack around Bentiu, and there is fighting now around Bentiu, and we are confident that the SPLA will control that situation.
James Gadedak, the spokesperson for rebel leader and former vice president Riek Machar, disputes that information.
Today, this morning at 9 a.m., our forces launched a counterattack and sliced out the German forces. So it is the opposition forces that are now in full control of the town. The government forces have withdrawn and moving towards northern part of the town.
Control of Bentiu has changed hands several times since fighting broke out in December. Gadet says rebels have also launched a counterattack in Nasir, but have not gained control of that town, which has been used as base for rebel fighters since the fighting began. The fighting came just days after U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry visited Juba and called on both sides to immediately stop fighting. Aguirre says the SPLA welcomed pressure from the international community to end the bloodsheds and squarely lays blame on the shoulders of the opposition for the latest round of fighting.
Since the declaration of cessation of hostilities, the forces of Riek Machar never complied and publicly announced that they will continue the fight. And since they are spreading havoc, destruction, committing atrocities, killing of innocent civilians, women and children, in all wherever they attack.
The United Nations has accused the opposition of killing hundreds of civilians in targeted attacks when they took control of Bentiu last month, a charge the anti-government forces have vehemently denied. Gadet says the government should stop the blame game and concentrate on attaining peace.
It is unfortunate that the government has decided to launch attacks on our positions at this time when we are resuming for the peace talks, and especially after they promised the American envoy, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, that they were for peace and were willing to negotiate it.
Kerry told reporters while visiting Juba and Addis Ababa last week that President Salva Kiir has agreed to meet face-to-face with Machar. There is still no word on whether Machar has agreed to the meeting. For BOA News, I'm Philip Aleu in Juba.
Lucy Pony contributed to this report from Nairobi. Eastern Equatorial State officials say 8 people were killed and several others wounded in intercommunal fighting over Friday. They say the clashes between people of Lomoruo and Bari villages stem from the death of a young boy killed in fighting last week. As Chelton Doki reports for VOA from Juba, state officials say 9 people were arrested in connection with the incident.
Members of the Lomoruo community blamed the Bari community for the child's death and launched the revenge attack. State officials say the attackers burnt down more than a dozen houses. Eastern Equatoria's Information Minister, Clement Laku Chimchim, says men and women were killed.
A fight took place between two villages in Burpayam, and that is Lomoruo and Bari. The Lomoruo went and attacked the Bari people and killed from them 8 people instantly.
Laku says dozens of villagers wounded in the attack were evacuated to Torit State Hospital, where they are being treated. He says there is little doubt the attackers were carrying out a revenge attack.
Some days ago, one child of the age of 5 years was killed, and now the people from Lomoruo suspected that it is the Bari people from the same area are the one who killed this child. So they went there as a revenge of the killing of that child.
State officials say the state government is investigating the matter and will do everything in its power to bring the culprits to justice. Laku says extra police have been deployed to the two communities to prevent more fighting.
Yesterday, 9 suspects were brought to the police for further investigation, and some of them are at large still. And now the government, the commissioner, as we are talking now, is on the ground. He's trying to bring the two communities together.
Last weekend's deadly attack marks the third time the two communities have clashed in the last 2 years. Laku says conflict between the two neighboring communities dates back to an unresolved conflict over land from years ago. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Western Bahar el-Ghazal State. More than 300 elders from across the greater Bahar el-Ghazal region gathered in Wau this weekend to plan steps to bring the community back together. They say they want everyone to know that they are welcome in Western Bahar el-Ghazal, no matter their ethnic background. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
State Interior Minister Aleu Ayen Aleu says, due to the fighting that broke out 2 weeks ago in an army training base in Western Bahar el-Ghazal, has some people still living in fear. Army officials say soldiers' families attacked and killed at least 5 trainees because of their ethnic background. Aleu says to alleviate those fears, officials called elders from across the state gathered to share the message that ethnically targeted violence is not acceptable and will not be tolerated, especially within the Sudan People's Liberation Army.
To the SPLA, we are your children. It is you who will bring peace. You should talk to your officers and tell them that this killing is over. There will never come a time when there is a country called South Sudan without all of the people.
State officials say more than 60 senior army officers fled Wau after the attack in Mapel because they were worried the violence would spread. At about the same time, some 700 people fled to the United Nations compound. Agot Bol is an elder from Warabi State. He says the country will never survive if different ethnic groups continue fighting each other. He says South Sudanese leaders, including tribal elders, take steps to bring people back together.
The incident that happened in Mapel has given us a bad image in Bahar el-Ghazal. I want to ask everyone to contribute foodstuffs because we're going to form a committee to take it to our brothers in the UN camp. We will go to UNMISS and implement this plan.
Bol says an 11-person committee will collect and deliver the food over the coming weeks. Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan applauded the move. He says they know the international community is watching to see what happens in Western Bahar el-Ghazal and he is determined to prove that ethnic communities within his state are reconciling.
Any human rights violation that happens in the country, it will affect our top leaders. We will be held accountable. If you commit any individual action at this moment, it will have an impact on your leaders.
Hassan says the situation here has been calm for more than a week, and he expects it to remain that way. He says if the people living at the UN base decide to return to their homes, no one should bother them. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Dripping water taps, wastewater from washing, and rain can form pools of stagnant water where malaria-carrying mosquitoes and other parasites breed. But there are ways to minimize the risk. First, don't dispose of water in a low-lying area which doesn't drain naturally. If there's a stagnant pool near your living space, sweep the water aside. Then, in that spot, dig a hole at least a meter deep. Refill it with sand or gravel, which is porous and allows the water into the soil so a pool doesn't form there. To help protect you and your family from disease, do what you can to eliminate stagnant water.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Conflict over land issues continue in Darfur. We will explain to you why when we come back.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should the number of seats in parliament be set aside for minorities?
There cannot be neglect in the government, because they also play their role in the government also. They must be considered also there.
In my opinion, I don't think there's a need to set aside seats for minority, because you would want to look at what defines minority. Within a minority, you would want to still create more minorities.
A number of seats should be set aside for minorities because all of us are not the same. We are not equal. Generally, with the model, with our incomes, and with our generally the way we are made up. Like, for example, you find people who are disabled, handicapped, albinos, and the rest. So they need to be there.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Armed conflict over land rights has displaced hundreds of thousands of people in Darfur in recent months. The international anti-poverty organization Oxfam says the land rights system in Darfur is causing its communities to fight each other. It says the recent discovery of gold and oil in the region is fueling more violence and forcing thousands of people off their land. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more.
Fighting over land in Darfur has been going on for years, but it has intensified in recent years because of the discovery of oil and gold in the region. Mark Cohen, a senior researcher at Oxfam America, explains that in the past, farmers and herders used the land to their mutual benefit, but now they're killing each other to have exclusive access to land under weakened tribal administrations.
People have turned to armed violence because the traditional dispute resolution mechanisms collapsed. They were based on multiple use and traditional leaders, village sheikhs, allocating rights to use land.
Cohen says now that oil and mineral deposits have been found, there's even more fighting between farmers and pastoralists. He says the government is adding to the problem.
In addition, in recent years, there has been acquisition of land by investors. So it's quite easy for people from outside the region to acquire land. And so this has meant that both the farmers and pastoralists of the region no longer have access to land.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, confirms that armed violence over natural resources routinely erupts in the troubled region. But he says the government cannot regulate gold mining activities in Darfur.
They go there, they search with the scanner for gold. It is not actually which you can regulate by law. Sometimes they find a very rich place full of gold, and this is where it can erupt some sort of struggle.
But Bilal insists this has changed.
Now that that happened, the government took over the place.
Observers dispute that claim. Rasha Attiyani, engineer and civil activist from Darfur, says the conflict comes from an outdated system run by tribes.
There is an old system called Hakura, which entails that a particular piece of land is strictly owned by a particular person or family or tribe.
Attiyani explains that conflict arises when multiple parties claim the same piece of land and forbid its use by any other groups.
So many tribes say, this is our land, and the mere trespassing of someone from outside the tribe is immediately a crime.
And if that happens, armed men often shoot and kill the alleged trespassers. Darfur is further decimated by ongoing fighting between government-backed militias and armed tribal groups that has continued for at least a decade. Human rights groups accuse the government of carrying out near-daily aerial bombardments on Darfur. United Nations agencies estimate that the war in Darfur has claimed the lives of more than 200,000 civilians and left more than 2 million internally displaced persons in need of urgent assistance. President Omar al-Bashir is wanted by the International Criminal Court on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
South Africans are preparing for elections scheduled for Tuesday, and some former officials with the ruling National Congress have called for protest vote against the party during the balloting. For millions of South Africans still living without basic services, change promised by Nelson Mandela's historic party is taking too long to occur. Emily Yob reports on what the election may mean for the future of ANC.
As they sing the praises of South African opposition leader Julius Malema and his party, the EFF, many of these Red Beret supporters used to sport different colors. Those of Nelson Mandela's party, the ANC, which contributed to ending white minority rule 20 years ago. After two decades in power, however, the ruling party has alienated some supporters who still don't see the improvement the historic Liberation Party promised them.
I was supporting ANC before. Service delivery, unemployment, crime, a lot of things that are not happening. The promise that are not delivered to the community. Now that is the reason, one of the reasons that I've changed to EFF.
Like Tifo Moeng, more and more South Africans are losing patience because of these issues. While progress has been made, more than half the country's population still lives under the poverty line, and numerous violent protests across the country have happened in recent years. Social tension peaked 2 years ago in the town of Marikana, resulting in police officers shooting dead more than 30 minors who were demanding salary increases. More recently, anti-corruption and service delivery protests erupted in the township of Bakersdal, 50 kilometers from Johannesburg. With no water, no electricity, and shacks for permanent homes, most residents say nothing has changed in 20 years.
Yeah, I'm angry with the ANC. Always ANC used to promise us everything, jobs, houses, but because of now we are going to vote, they promise us houses. How many years we are living here in Bakersdal?
Buti Tale used to vote for the ANC, but now votes for the main opposition party. History lecturer Noor Niftakhodian says the ANC has been trying to improve people's life, but not always in a sustainable way. And that is what contributes to people's current frustration.
Gains made over the last 20 years have been significant. The fact is that more people live in formal houses now than ever before. Now that access is problematic. The houses are not good houses. People often get cut off from water and electricity. Education is in a bad state. There are gains, but the gains are being undermined. And we're at the point where more and more people are coming to the conclusion that the gains that have been made by the New Democracy and by the ANC are being reversed.
Despite the discontent among some voters, a new poll shows the ANC is expected to win about 64% of the votes. Emily Yab for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A French news report says the radical sect Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for last month's kidnapping of hundreds of schoolgirls in northern Nigeria. AFP news agency says it has obtained a video in which Boko Haram's leader, Abu Bakr Shekou, says, "I abducted your girls." The video was not immediately made public. Gunmen abducted the girls from a school in the town of Chibok, Borno State, on April 14th. Nigerian authorities say some escaped, but 276 are still missing. Yesterday, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan ordered top security officials to, quote, do everything possible, end quote, to secure the girls' release. Ukrainian government forces fought gun battles today with pro-Russian militia in the separatist-controlled eastern Ukrainian city of Slovyansk. Russia's Interfax news agency quoted a separatist source in Slovyansk as saying many pro-Russian militants, possibly more than 20, had been killed in the fighting. Ukraine's interior ministry reported that 4 paramilitary police had died in the battle. And finally, aid workers in northern Afghanistan are distributing food and tents to the survivors of a massive landslide that buried the village of Abarek. Government officials say anywhere between 250 and 2,000 people were killed in the disaster. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the Burundian musician Kidum singing about love in his native Kinyarwanda language. Yeah, yeah.
Zanyani mbari kuno kuno mbona Nabonyo rukundari maindagu Nabonya rufindo Nakunzu morondo Namwe mbangi sese Sinamubu inga nubu menyini tangi sikanwa Temera kubiki matichi rukundo Temeru rufugu kwa banu Kwemera ziru kwisera murukundo mfukani
Murukundo zatumera mungere
Murukundo urukundo
Zatumera ubashikira manjiko kwifuma basi
Murukundo
zatumera mungere
Warukundo, warukundo gukutsizo
Zatumera ubashikira manjiko kwifuma basi Mamera bara nikera mye
Kirato, kigahengama Wiyima, wisonze, shutuli kumukanda Ukori joro numurango Ukingiri nyungu sumuryango Ukui kirenge undi na we Motema nereke Hafugu wabubezwe Timba numubabaro Ndajibu kake urukundo rugiso satu kivuka
We have been listening to Kidum with the song Urukundo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a peaceful evening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.